This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 24th of February, 2012. Hello and welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 24th of February, which this week have been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Now to this week's announcements, and let's start with what's on. The Matisse exhibition continues at the Winchester Discovery Centre until the 18th of March 2012. This exhibition is especially interesting because during the later years of his life, Henri Matisse suffered from sight loss and the style of his work changed dramatically. He adjusted to his sight loss by working with huge sheets of paper he could still see and large blocks of painted paper in vibrant colours which he cut out. The exhibition features 35 lithographic prints of the famous cutouts. There will be a workshop in the learning spaces at the Discovery Centre, led by Keith Hatter. Here, you can learn more about how Matisse created his cutout pictures and create one of your own using the same method. The workshop will be on Wednesday, 29th of February, starting at 10 a.m. and lasting for about an hour. If you'd like to go to the workshop, please telephone 01 962 873603. I'll say that number again. 01 962 873603. And you can book a free place. And that is on at the gallery at Winchester Discovery Centre in Jury Street. Winchester Farmers Market takes place on the second and final Sunday of each month, and next Sunday, the 26th of February, is the next time we'll see the market. InTech, interactive exhibition about health, identity and ancestry. Find out how genetics can be used to understand or help medical conditions, solve a crime, and see how unusual you are through a series of hands-on activities. This is the Intect Science Centre and Planetarium, Morne Hill, Telegraph Way, Winchester. If you'd like to ring them, it's 01962 863 791. 01962 863 791. And now we're into the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. The Best of British 2012. And Winchester will be having many events in May, which you may want to start booking now. The Mayfest brings concerts, sessions and ceilidhs to Winchester's streets, pubs and arts venues for two vibrant days of folk, jazz, roots and blues in May. The date and time, 25th of May at 10 a.m, Saturday, 26th of May at 11 p.m. at in and around the Winchester High Street. Then Claire Tomalin will be talking on Charles Dickens, and she is our best literary biographer, and she discusses the life and work of one of our best and most influential novelists. Claire Tomalin's acclaimed life of Dickens went straight into the bestseller lists. The date and time for this is Saturday, the 26th of May at 6 p.m, and the location is the Guildhall, Winchester. The County Service of Thanksgiving for the Queen's Diamonds Jubilee. To mark 60 years of the Queen's reign, Winchester Cathedral will commemorate this special occasion with a County Service of Thanksgiving for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. It will be at 11 p.m. as part of the lead-up to the national celebrations. The date and time, Sunday the 27th of May at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and the location is Winchester Cathedral. Just William, live. BBC radio recording with Martin Jarvis. Hear him read and record two hilarious Just William short stories and meet Martin afterwards. These popular stories for all the family from 9 to 90 features the scruffy, irrepressible young schoolboy William Brown. The date and time for this is the 27th of May at 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. and that is at the Winchester Theatre Royal. The Churchill Letters, read by Robert Hardy and Celia Sandis. Robert Hardy has portrayed Winston Churchill 7 times on screen and stage. Celia Sandis takes part of the grandmother, Clementine Churchill. The extraordinary and inspiring correspondence throughout their long marriage has now been gathered. The date and time for this is Thursday, 31st of May, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and that is at the Guildhall, Winchester. And finally, concerts in Winchester. Saturday, March the 3rd, Bach's St. Matthew Passion, Winchester Cathedral, 7:15. Tickets range from £12 to £20. The telephone number to contact is 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. And then on Saturday, March the 3rd also, Twyford Singers and Players, excuse me, in St. Cross Church, Winchester, 7:30 p.m, Haydn's Stabat Mater and Mozart's Ave Verum Corpus. And those tickets range from £7 to £12.50. Telephone number 01962 712 722. And again, 01962 712 722. And that's it for the announcements for now. The lighting up time ends on Friday, the 24th of February at 7:03 a.m. and begins at 5:37 p.m. On Wednesday, the 29th of February, lighting up ends at 6:52 a.m. and begins at 5:46 p.m. And if you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, that number again for you, 01962 862 826. And please don't forget, if you prefer not to listen to any particular item on the recording, you can just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. The main headlines this week are plans for pioneering two-form school in the city, search to find new home for River Park, shedding light on cathedral's rich history, and we'll be asking Claire, please, to begin with the story behind the first headline.
Plans for pioneering two-form school in city. Plans for pioneering new school in Winchester City to tackle a shortage of places have been unveiled by county chiefs. The county council has identified a potential site for a two-form entry primary on the site of Rothery Boarding House at the Westgate School. The idea is the Westgate, currently a secondary, would become a school for pupils aged 4 to 16, making it the first county-run combined primary and secondary school in Hampshire. The council said a separate proposal to close the girls' boarding house at Rotherley, which also houses a nursery school, had created the opportunity to site a primary there. If it gets the go-ahead, the new school would open its doors to the first reception pupils in September 2014. The council is preparing to launch a public consultation on the proposals next month. It is not yet known if Rotherley would be bulldozed to make way for the new primary or if the existing buildings would be refurbished. During building, Rotherley Baby Cottage and Nursery would move to temporary accommodation on site. Council officers say the nursery will be included in any new building scheme. Meanwhile, alternative accommodation would be found for the current boarders at Rotherley and King's School boarding house in Sarum Road, also earmarked for closure. The announcement comes after the local authority has come under fire for failing to plan for a shortage of reception class places, despite warnings from city councillors and head teachers. Councillor Roy Perry, deputy leader of the County Council and executive lead member for Children's Services, said, "This is one possible solution to the pressure on primary school places currently being experienced in the city. The other solution that is currently available to us is to continue with the strategy to provide additional places in the established primary schools in Winchester through a combination of modular, temporary classrooms and permanent accommodation. We know that for some schools that represents a real challenge. A new two-form primary schooling provision would take up the majority of the pressure. Some expansion of other schools would still be required, but to a much lesser extent." He added, "Although the formal proposals cannot be completed and published until March, in view of the current debate, I felt it was not fair to wait until then to let people know that this important new option might be available. As previously reported, the Council's School Places Plan 2011-15, currently out for public consultation, identified a shortage of places in the city, but made no proposals for a new primary other than at Barton Farm. After the plan was published last December, the Council announced plans to expand city schools with temporary classrooms to provide an extra 80 reception places this September. Schools earmarked for expansion include Weston, St Peter's Catholic, Winall, All Saints, Kingsworthy and Hairstock. Some head teachers have been reluctant to take extra pupils because they fear overcrowding strains core facilities such as school halls and kitchens. Mark Benzie, a parent governor at Weston, a campaigner for more primary school places in the city, said, "This is what we have wanted all along, a long-term solution and not a sticking plaster. The council has moved on massively since last November, with a senior officer who told me there was no land in Winchester for a new school. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine welcomed the announcement. He said, "This will be controversial in a number of respects, but I'm really pleased the growing campaign for a new school in Winchester has focused minds so quickly and already led to proposals from the County Council. The Council has said nearly all pupils would live within walking distance of the proposed Westgate Primary, but it will analyse extra traffic and draw up a travel plan." County Councillor Jackie Porter, Liberal Democrat opposition spokesman for Children's Services, said, "This certainly seems to be an innovative solution, but we await the views of local head teachers and parents. Councillor Perry will decide whether to go out to public consultation on March 23rd.
Search to find new home for River Park. Upgrading current building could prove too costly. Sites across Winchester are being assessed for a possible new home for River Park Leisure Centre. Saddled with rising maintenance costs, the City Council is deciding whether to modernise the centre. The alternative is to build a new one, and council officers are looking at potential sites. This week, one was put forward by Winchester Fit for the Future, a campaign group for city sports clubs. It has suggested the council depot in Bar End Road. Once run by Serco and now by Biffer, it will soon be replaced by a new depot in Barfield Close nearby. Once vacant, the land beside the city's running track and University of Winchester pitches could be ideal, the group says. Its campaign director is Emma Back from Full Flood, whose children are members of several clubs backing the drive. She said, "With all the work that needs doing at River Park Leisure Centre, it might make more sense to look elsewhere. She added that the centre, which opened in 1974, had a large carbon footprint and could not host major competitions. Sue Faulkner, who chairs Winchester City Penguin Swimming Club, said they would like a 50-metre pool. That would allow the club, which has around 800 members, to host swimming galas. At the moment, the nearest Olympic-sized pools are in Portsmouth and Aldershot, she said. A larger pool, which could be divided in half, would provide more space for club swimmers and public users, she added. I think we have one of the highest levels of sports participation in the country, and Winchester deserves facilities which reflect that, she said. Along with the Penguins, several other groups are backing the campaign, including Winchester and District Athletics Club. City Council Cabinet Member for Culture, Heritage and Sport, Councillor Patricia Stallard, said she was pleased they were involved. She added there was a sound argument for Bar End, but they were looking at several sites. She said, "Our minds are not closed. We have asked the estates officers to examine all possible options. We will make an informed choice because we don't want to end up saying we'll put it here and then realise it wasn't the best place." If the council modernises River Park Leisure Centre, the likely cost is £4 million. As buildings get older, the maintenance costs get higher, so we have to pay more each year, said Councillor Stallard. Councillor Dominic Hiscock, who represents the area where the centre is currently based, said he wanted it to stay put. He said, "I think it would be a shame if the leisure centre moved. It's a good facility in the middle of the city." He added that demolishing it and selling the land might be difficult because it was prone to flooding. "If the council depends on the value of that site being high, then I think it might end up disappointed," he said. Councillor Chris Pines, whose ward includes the council depot, said, "I've heard that the council might be looking at three different sites, but it's entirely speculation at this stage." He added that his preferred use of the vacant depot would be affordable housing. He said, "We've invested so much into River Park Leisure Centre that to dump it and start again would be an enormous cost, and I'm not sure if people have thought that one through. It would be nice to have a new leisure centre, but we're only a small town, and can we afford it?"
Shedding light on cathedrals' rich history. A major new show is coming to Winchester Cathedral later this year, voiced by a host of household names. Those taking part include Dame Judi Dench, Alan Titchmarsh, and David Suchet. They will be joining forces to tell the story of Winchester Cathedral through the centuries. It's only the third time in living memory that it's been attempted, and the last show of its kind was in 1974. Thanks to new technology, a dazzling visual and audio show is being planned for Winchester Chronicles of Light. The story will be told through the eyes of some of the prominent people linked with the landmark. They will include King Canute, Isaac Walton, Jane Austen, and William Walker. An official launch was held last Thursday, attended by 50 guests and two members of the All-Star cast. They were the television and film actors Wendy Craig and Bernard Cribbins. Bernard said, "We've had a long day recording and it went well, and to be in this lovely building with such a great atmosphere has been an absolute joy." His co-star said, "It's such a fine building, and the Chronicles of Light will be magnificent, and it will bring so many people to the cathedral." Other performers who will be recording vocal input include Hugh Dennis, Finty Williams, and John Rhys Davies. The cast also features newsreader Alastair Stewart from Brandine, along with Tamsin Gregg, who is voicing Jane Austen. The script for the show comes from Winchester-based playwright Philip Glassborough, who also wrote The Winchester Passion, which brought thousands of visitors to the city in 2008. Sophie Hacker, the creative director, said at the launch, "It's unique in the way we'll be staging the Chronicles of Light, because modern technology gives us a new way of telling the cathedral's story." Several images were projected around the landmark as a taste of things to come, before the actual footage is filmed later this year. The lighting and projection is being carried out by Mark Gardner, with Terry Braun in charge of filming and animation. Canon Rowley Ream is the executive producer. Winchester, Chronicles of Light, will be shown at the cathedral from Friday, October the 12th, to Sunday, October 28th. Tickets range from £50 for the best seats to £10 for standing tickets, and can be booked on 01962 857 275. Proceeds from the event will go towards funding a new lighting and sound system for the cathedral. And there are some photographs of the projections that were shown last Thursday, and it does look really exciting.
And now we'll have Claire reading Christian comment, please.
This is written by Mary Gray, and she has entitled it, "Come to Macedon and Help Us." I'm haunted, as I'm sure many readers are, by the current misery that Greece and its people are experiencing. That this famous nation, from which we have received so many contributions to art, culture and language, not least the Olympic Games, which we are about to celebrate here this year, should be brought to such humiliation. A nation that constructed such magnificent temples now cannot feed its own children. Some are even being sold. What does Christianity have to say about such a tragedy to a nation that gave us the tragedy as revered art form? Remember the desperate call that went out from Macedonia 2,000 years ago to the fledgling Christian community in Jerusalem. Come over here and help us. And St. Paul responded with alacrity. The rest we know is history. Does that call echo still? Granted that the current context is different, Paul responded to a culture still rooted in the worship of Greek pantheism and arrived to preach the living God of Christianity. Now the false gods are those of extremes of wealth and consumerism. All biblical faith traditions stress love of neighbour, alms, giving, compassion, and so on. But this is usually understood in a personal way. Even the healing stories of Jesus, like the much-loved Good Samaritan, seem to reach out to individuals. In our times, we are speaking not only about a nation, but a global financial system that threatens to bring Greece and possibly other countries to its knees. But let's dig deeper. Judaism had compassion for those in debt with its Jubilee laws, Leviticus 19, and we drew on these earlier with the campaign to cancel the debts, Jubilee 2000. Jesus also challenged those in power, both the Roman and the Jewish authorities, who extorted money, did not release from debt, and kept a system going where, under occupation, poverty would be relentless. It was an alternative system that he preached, a kingdom where the poorest and most vulnerable would be privileged, not a state of affairs that ancient Greece would have known. This kingdom of God that Paul came to Macedon to preach would be a reality where people would flourish, encapsulating physical, psychological, and spiritual well-being. The French have a beautiful word for it, le bonheur. At this late stage, when the politics still focuses on whether Greece will put together sufficient packages of austerity to qualify for bailout, is it too late to consider whether the desperate people who walk the streets in protest will ever experience le bonheur with or without this New Deal? And that was written by Mary Gray.
Thank you. And we'll have letters to the editor now, starting, please, with Robin.
And Peter Stewart from Bishopstoke feels that hustle and bustle are essential for trade. Sir, what a great photo. Traffic in Winchester High Street, 1910. Chronicles of the Past, February the 16th. I could almost feel the hustle and bustle lost through pedestrianisation. Do you remember the High Street traffic? Even on a quiet day, it created movement and activity, an urgency to buy. Without that urgency, retail goes quiet, and gregarious people go elsewhere to shop. Winchester could regain all its loss to out-of-town shopping and internet sales by scrapping pedestrianisation and adopting two-hour free parking. Let's encourage traffic, hence shoppers, back into the High Street and watch its renaissance. Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
And another letter on the subject of the High Street is entitled The Truth Behind... Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm so sorry. Is entitled Plus ça change. Sir, from Tanner's Winchester Quarterly Record for February the 15th, 1864. Winchester Lent Fair occurred today, and though the day was a dirty one, the city appeared to be extraordinarily crowded with country people, who no doubt were greatly inconvenienced by the numerous stalls blocking up our narrow High Street. In nearly 150 years, things don't seem to have changed much. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. And that letter comes from Robert Brown of the Winchester Bookshop, St George's Street, Winchester.
This letter from Christine Melson is headed, This Film Frippery is Crass and Foolhardy. Sir, it is with great regret that I have been forced to see a council which we and successive governments have in the past freely admitted is generally well run, lose its marbles. In this time of austerity, Hampshire County Council has decided to spend nearly £250,000 on self-aggrandisement by installing film cameras in the council chamber. It is widely thought that failed actors become politicians, and this proves the point. I can well imagine that over the last few weeks, councillors have been finding out which is their best side and studying the art practised in a Hamlet advertisement, growing half a dozen hairs to cover the bald patch. Maybe they have been taking lessons in the art of public speaking. Now, that may well be an improvement. Will we pay for these? And what will those who spend so much time of their sleep do? We may possibly see a rise in trade for the matchstick and dark glasses manufacturers. Of course, there are those councillors who will love it and will certainly play to the camera. But is it perhaps possible that there will be others who will hate it and be put off their stroke? It will be interesting to see just how many people will use this service after the initial novelty wears off. I'm willing to wager it will not be many. Perhaps a few wives and girlfriends, husbands and boyfriends, and the odd reporter unable to get to the castle. This council has been crass and foolhardy to introduce this frippery at this time of belt tightening. It seems to be wholly unaware that this sort of money would help out many really feeling the pinch. I'm sorry, Hampshire County Council, this time you have got it wrong, very wrong, for this is one enormous white elephant. Christine Melson, Church Lane, Headley.
Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester, says Pickles and Co. shortchanged us over simplified planning. Sir, if Eric Pickles had set out to cause deliberate chaos, he could hardly have done it better. By handing the decision on Barton Farm to Winchester City Council, he ensured that it was, in effect, made by the leader, who, despite having precisely the same number of councillors as the Liberal Democrats, is nonetheless taken to embody the wishes of the entire population of the district. It has been well documented, following last autumn's public meeting at the Theatre Royal, that Councillor Beckett is opposed in this by his own party's MP. Carla's appeal against the refusal the City Council made previously will now be decided by the Minister. But two or three months on, the site is included in the local development framework, voted for by councillors whose interests lie in the southern parishes. It has been remarked that 12 of the 18 councillors representing the city wards, i.e. those immediately affected by the Barton Farm decision, are Liberal Democrats, as are all four of those representing voters in Kingsworthy and Littleton and Harestock, the next wards bordering the contested area. They voted against the framework. Even that plan has still to be rubber-stamped, and there is a chance that it will be found to be unsound when put to the test. If this is localism and democracy, which Pickles and Co. say they want, can we have proper weight given to the proper local votes? And if this is the coalition's simplified planning, give me the old variety. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Lib Dems Are Just As Much to Blame and comes from Patrick Davis. What hypocrisy for local Lib Dems to give the impression that they could organise any meaningful opposition within their national party to the Health and Social Care Bill at this late stage. They know it has only survived because Lib Dem MPs and peers have been supporting it. We had the same bogus concern a year ago, but nothing changed. The bill is still vigorously opposed by the British Medical Association and the Royal Colleges of Nursing and Midwives. This cynical move is surely related to the imminent local elections, their abysmal position in national opinion polls, and a desperate attempt to distance themselves from coalition plans to commercialise the NHS. This bill is one of the flagship pieces of legislation from the Tory Lib Dem coalition. A key member of Andrew Lansley's team is his Lib Dem Minister of State, Paul Burstow. There have been 13 divisions in the House of Lords on the bill since October. The Lib Dems have voted as a bloc with the government on all of them. On no occasion did more than three Lib Dems vote against. No Lib Dem peer with Winchester connections has ever voted against the bill. Prominent supporters in the Lords Division lobby have been Lord Chidgey, Alsford resident and former MP for Eastleigh, Lord Stoneham of Droxford, Lib Dem agent in Winchester elections, and Baroness Thomas of Winchester, president of Winchester Lib Dems. Only last week, Nick Clegg, Lib Dem leader and deputy PM, made the Lib Dem line clear. Andrew Lansley is the architect of the NHS bill. He cares passionately about the NHS. He's the right man. Make no mistake, the Lib Dems are jointly responsible at every level for the damage the government is inflicting on our health service. And that letter was from Patrick Davis, Cannon Street, Winchester.
Another letter about the bill from Dr. John Akers. And this one is headed, Can Bill Be Good for Nation's Health? Sir, the innocuously named Health and Social Care Bill proposes the most fundamental change to the National Health Service since 1948. To justify such a big change, there should be good and valid reasons. I'm worried about this. Before the general election, the government promised not to reorganise the NHS. After the election, they did the opposite. This feels dishonest and is dangerous for democracy. It makes me lose trust in what politicians are telling us. The evidence is that satisfaction with the NHS has never been higher. The head of health at the Independent Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development said, November 2011, that the NHS was one of the best performers in the world and could be even better were it not for its frequent reforms. So why is the government trying to change something that people like and works? Some £1.7 billion has been put aside this year for the reforms. But there is a view that the costs will exceed any savings, and all at a time when cuts are being made all across the country and the NHS has to make savings of £20 billion. So at a time of severe financial challenge, we are asked to accept that a costly major reorganisation, which we were promised would not take place, is required to change a system that is one of the best performers in the world and which would do even better if it were not reorganised so often. We seem to be in a world of Alice in Wonderland politics. How can this bill possibly be good for a nation's health? Dr. John Akers, Andover Road North, Winchester.
Alan Brown of Week's letter is headed, "More development will only worsen county's water crisis." I watched the local area news on TV last night with great interest. There were two items that interested me especially. The first was the report that the south of England, including Hampshire, is likely to suffer drought conditions this spring and summer. The other matter that concerned me was the report made about the conflict in the Basingstoke area regarding the building of more homes. I have to ask, have the planners considered the consequences of each of these matters on the other? On the one hand, we are told that to conserve the water we are likely to have, we must use it with care. Take shorter showers, make sure taps are not left running or dripping, and not to use hose pipes. All very sensible ideas. But on the other hand, we can expect sites like Barton Farm and open countryside around Basingstoke to be covered with thousands of new homes. Not only will the new occupants of these proposed homes expect to use even more water to shower, water their gardens, and use water for their day-to-day living, but the quantity of water required to build the homes will surely be huge. Surely enough is enough. With more and more homes being built, there will always be the probability of shortages of all kinds of things, especially water. Alan Brown, Lynch Close, Week, Winchester.
This letter is entitled "Truth Behind Highcliffe Protest," and the name and address has been supplied. After reading the article about the latest plans in Highcliffe for the Fifields Road garages, I feel I have to correct you regarding the reason for the protest about the plans for the hostel nearly a decade ago. It was never about teenagers leaving care, or indeed single mothers. The problem was that neither Two Saints nor Winchester City Council would provide a guarantee that sex offenders would not be housed there. As it was to be on a council estate full of children and near a primary school, a guarantee seemed appropriate. How can I be so sure of the reasons for the campaign? I started it. I lived adjacent to the site and had two young children.
This letter is from Carol Warwood and it's headed, "Photo would mean a lot to Margaret." Sir, I'm trying to trace relatives of Charles and Eleanor Stone, who were wed in Winchester in 1913. Their son, Sidney Stone, was a pilot officer killed in 1941 in a plane crash in Ireland. He was 26. At the time, his parents ran the Elephant and Castle in Ryde, Isle of Wight. My relative, Margaret Donisthorpe, now 97, lost her only photo of Sidney when she moved into a care home. Childhood sweethearts, they went to Denmark School and lived in Tower Street, Winchester. At that time, Charles was chauffeur to Herbert and Annie Johnson. Margaret later moved to London. She never married. I am trying to trace a photo of him which could be copied as a surprise for her. I have tried RAF and World War II databases without any luck. Margaret is frail now, but as bright as a button, and I know it would mean a lot to her. And that is from Carol Werwood, Brook Lane, Sarisbury Green, and her email address is cwerwood, all small letters, 1234, at btinternet.com.
And our next item, the historical items, starting 200 years ago, please, from Robin.
On Thursday evening last, as John Dobie was returning from Ampfield to Romsey, he was stopped by two men who demanded his money. And on his saying he had none, they knocked him down and robbed him of £23. This sum was almost literally all the money he was possessed of, which he had saved for the purpose of buying a horse to carry wood from the New Forest to Salisbury. The second item, three oxen, the property of Mr. Simmons of St. Cross near Winchester, were stolen this week. They were traced to Gosport, and it appeared they were about to be sold to a person there, when Mr. Simmons's bailiff arrived there in search of them. It chanced that the bailiff inquired of the very person to whom the beasts were offered, who, with the bailiff, went to a public house near and secured the prisoner. He was afterwards committed to Gosport Bridewell for trial at the ensuing assizes.
100 years ago, 1912. City crier, Mr. William Hall, returned to Winchester yesterday, the proud possessor of the second prize bell, which he had won at the contest at Devizes, for the Town Crier's Championship of the United Kingdom, for which there were 37 entries, some of the criers being mounted. The competition took place in the spacious market square, where a platform had been erected, from which the criers shouted the scheduled words. And a second item. A lad named Walsh, the son of Sergeant Major Walsh of the Hants Constabulary, met with an accident when cycling into Stockbridge Road from the hill at the back of the Union, leading from the Arbour, on Thursday morning. He appears to have run into the wall and had a nasty spill, injuring his hands and wounding his right cheek and temple, as well as smashing his machine. He was removed to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, where he was detained.
50 years ago, 1962, Alsford traders showed they were fully in favour of a bypass for the town when condemnations of the traffic problem that there were applauded on Wednesday night at the annual dinner of the Alsford Chamber of Trade. Guest of honour John Arlott, proposing the toast to the chamber, spoke of the harmful and vicious damage caused by the strange and sad division of the A31 trunk road. A shock for the Winchester Preservation Trust came this week with the news that work had already commenced on the partial demolition of one of the city's architectural landmarks. The building concerned is 102 High Street, part of the original manor of Godbegot. Breaking the news on Thursday, Mrs. Barbara Carpenter-Turner said that despite an appeal for restraint, the commercial owners of the site were already proceeding with plans for shop redevelopment.
1987. A call for the return of hanging to stem the tide of violent crime involving guns has been made by Winchester and Alton MP John Brown, who has written to the Home Secretary urging him to think again. He declared in his letter, "Would you not accept that the abolition of capital punishment has coincided, if not led to, a great incidence of firearms being carried by criminals?" His views were prompted by absurd comments by the opposition at Home Office parliamentary questions last week. And a second item. The bravery of a hitchhiker saved a lorry driver from certain death after an horrific smash on the Chandlers Ford bypass on Tuesday. No one at the scene could explain why the canvas-sided articulated lorry, carrying a load of plastic dustbin liners, suddenly swerved and ploughed through the crash barriers on the bridge over Chestnut Avenue onto the roadway 30 feet below, where it exploded in flames and thick black smoke.
And now on to editorial comment this week, which is entitled "Big Thinking Needed to Tackle Big Problems." There can have been few weeks in recent times with so many major schemes bubbling under the surface in Winchester. This week, we report on the proposal for the first school in Hampshire for 4 to 16-year-olds, a campaign to relocate the River Park Leisure Centre from Hyde to Bar End, and plans for the redevelopment of the Cattle Market car park. Behind the scenes, too, Barton Farm is never far away. It shows that people are prepared to think big on tackling big problems. This is good for the city and the district. The County Council is to be commended on proposing such a radical plan to address a shortage of school places instead of cramming more children into existing schools. Moving the increasingly decrepit Leisure Centre away from the largest cul-de-sac in the city down to the sports stadium and a more accessible location also appears to have merit, although the devil would be in the detail. However, on the cattle market, we share concerns about piecemeal development. A holistic look at redeveloping the swathe of land from Gladstone Street all the way to Worthy Lane was a sensible approach.
And Belgarum this week starts off with an article about Enigma variations. They played a crucial role in the course of the Second World War, but the Enigma machine, seen in Winchester recently, was not used to encrypt any German war plans, but was an educational tool. Broadcaster and science writer Dr. Simon Singh visited the Discovery Centre with a machine to show how Alan Turing and his team of mathematicians from Bletchley Park broke the German codes. The breaking of those cryptic messages was described by Winston Churchill as one of the key reasons the Allies won the war. But this time, Dr. Singh did not stumble upon any secret plans. The event was organised by Winchester Skeptics, who've made the Discovery Centre their new home. They meet regularly to discuss topics such as climate change, alternative medicine, cosmology, and paranormal psychology. And a second item from Belgarum, "Please Release Me." A member of staff at Radian Housing was managing the display at its recent public consultation over controversial plans for homes off Cromwell Road, Stanmore. Politely asked a question or two, he took umbrage at a factual error that appeared in an earlier report. "I'm not going to answer any of your questions. You'll have to wait until our press release," he said loftily. "Oh, thank you, sir," as Belgarum tugs his forelock.
this is your say. And we asked, is Lent still relevant, and will you be giving anything up for it? Ben Franklin, who's 16, a student at Peter Simmons College of Chase Farm Close, Waltham Chase, said, I will probably give up fast food for Lent. Although I don't particularly believe in Lent, it's fun to try it out and see if you can do it for the whole time. Rebecca Johns, who's 37, a marketing director of Great Field Road Week, said, I'm half Catholic and half Jehovah's Witness, but I was brought up atheist. My mum still does it every year, and when I was younger, I did used to give up something. But I guess I've given up anything. It's not for me. Kevin Wheeler, who's 50, a train driver of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, said, To be honest, I've not even thought about it. It's just like any other day of the week for me. I get up and go to work and don't really do anything differently. I just don't think about it at all. Mary Martin, who's 39, a housewife of St. Faith's Road, St. Cross, said, I'm a Christian and I go to church every week, but I don't really give up things for Lent. Giving up chocolate makes me grumpy. But it's a good principle and makes people think about what they can do without.
And now we'll have Robin reading first person, please.
And first person this week, by Khalid Aziz, is headed, Our Time Will Surely Come. I have just joined the board of trustees of Enham, the charity which for nearly a century has been supporting people with disabilities. Based near Andover, it is essentially a national charity which happens to be based in Hampshire, and as such, it is a jewel in the crown of disability support. As I know from my experience with Naomi House and Jack's Place, the way in which society looks upon people with disabilities has changed hugely in the decades since the Second World War. Back then, those who struggled to cope with the vicissitudes of daily life were often either shut away, particularly if they had a mental disability, or ghettoised in disability colonies. Thankfully, we are much more enlightened today, but there is more to do. One measure of a civilised society is how it deals with prisoners. Perhaps a better measure would be how it treats its disabled. By and large, Britain has done pretty well, although it tends to have been charities founded by far-seeing and strong-minded individuals who have led the way and changed attitudes. All too often, the dead hand of well-meaning but fundamentally backside-covering officialdom has jumped on the bandwagon and slowed progress. But well-run charities with tough and visionary trustees have managed to keep things moving ahead. Today, as money is squeezed, one of the biggest challenges facing charities is to make sure they continue to speak loudly for those who have no voice, or at the most, a very quiet one. At Enham, I have been impressed by the efforts made to design an environment around their clients' individual needs. It's all too easy to lump all wheelchair users together. They are as individual as those of us who still manage to get around on two legs. Another key part of the Enham operation is the provision on meaningful employment for those who are able and want to work. The days of raffia mafia and basket weaving have evolved to include packing special teas and hampers for upmarket London stores to the assembly of electrical components. This activity pays real wages for real work from real contracts for market rate money. What's even more exciting is that way in which ghettoisation is minimised through mixing able-bodied volunteer workers with Enham's disabled workers. Compared with many charities, Enham does relatively little community fundraising. In these straitened times, this will have to change. But why should we care when the Enham tin is rattled beneath our nose? In truth, there will be very little tin rattling. Well, just as with Naomi House, parents of healthy children can empathise with those whose children have life-limiting conditions on the basis of their but for the grace of God. It's the same with adult disability. We're all living longer, but not necessarily in guaranteed great health. We should support Enham, if only because we are not yet disabled. Our time will surely come.
And now we're going to go on to further items of general news, and we'll start with Jerry, please.
People urged to get out the bunting. Hampshire Council chiefs say they are cutting red tape to make it easier for people to hold street parties to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. But a licence will still be required to hang bunting from lampposts. The council says this is to ensure there is a named organiser who is responsible for removing any flags after the event. But a permit for bunting has been slammed as nonsense and completely over the top by street party planners. Bishop's Waltham Parish Councillor Robert Shields, who is organising a street party in the town centre, said, "I thought councils were supposed to be relaxing the rules. I think a licence for bunting for small streets, such as cul-de-sacs, is nonsense, though I can see a need for rules on height of bunting for larger streets if traffic is still passing under." Another Diamond Jubilee street party planner, who asked not to be named, said, "How ridiculous and completely over the top. But it does ensure somebody is responsible for clearing up after the event, because the bunting could become an eyesore if it's still up several months later." Thousands of people across the county are expected to get together with their neighbours and hold street parties on the extended June bank holiday week. The county council has announced less bureaucracy surrounding road closures and insurance costs ahead of the celebrations this summer. This follows last year's royal wedding, after Whitehall urged councils to relax the rules for street parties. Conservative County Council leader Ken Thornber said, "Even more people may be spurred into organising a party in the street where they live if they know they can do so without having to deal with a lot of red tape, and particularly as we're being given the gift of an extra bank holiday." The local authority has said if the street is not a through road and no more than 500 people attend, there is no need for a licence or traffic plan. The only permission needed from the County Council is one for bunting. No fee will be charged. The Council, as Highways Authority, said organisers of small-scale events are not required to have public liability insurance, but has suggested they consider it as an option. However, insurance will be required for larger parties of more than 500 people. Meanwhile, any street party on a public through road will require a road closure. This means it will be closed to traffic, but not pedestrians. Applications for road closures need to be made to district and borough councils, and most have agreed to waive any charges for Diamond Jubilee street parties.
Pilkington back on home turf after latest adventure. Explorer John Pilkington is back in Winchester after an epic five-month journey across Central Asia. During the trip from Georgia to Afghanistan, he took pens and exercise books to a remote village school on the roof of the world. Mr. Pilkington was following in the footsteps of his hero Marco Polo along a less well-known part of the old Silk Road. The Foreign Office had advised Britons against travel to Afghanistan because of the war and Taliban fighters, but in one remote corner, intrepid visitors receive a warm welcome. He entered Afghanistan from its northern neighbour, Tajikistan, part of the former Soviet Union, by crossing a narrow bridge over the banks of the historic Panj River. He said, I crossed the river and stepped back 100 years. It's probably the most extraordinary border crossing I have ever done in terms of contrast from one side to another. On the Tajik side were cars, electric lights, piped water and central heating. On the Afghan side were donkeys, candles, water buckets and yak dung fires. From here he travelled through the 200-mile-long Wakhan Corridor, a finger of Afghanistan, separating Pakistan and Tajikistan. It leads to the Pamir Mountains, known as the Roof of the World, where four separate mountain ranges come together in peaks and glaciers. Mr. Pilkings said in the villages people instantly came out to greet him, his interpreter, and two horsemen, with bread and bowls of freshly made yak's milk yogurt. Top of his list of things to do was to take some pens and exercise books to a school for nomadic Kyrgyz children, one of 100 in Afghanistan, built or supported by humanitarian and mountaineer Greg Mortensen's Central Asia Institute. Mr. Pilkington travelled by horseback and on foot to reach the school in Bozai Gumbaz in the remote Pamir Mountains at an altitude of just under 4,000 metres. This is 3 times higher than Ben Nevis. The school had 27 pupils aged from 6 to 12, including about 7 girls. The children, who had travelled long distances, boarded at the school in 2 yurts or tents. Mr. Pilkington said it took a week to get there, but the students' reaction was heartwarming and humbling. As far as I could tell, they had no stationery whatsoever. After leaving Afghanistan, he continued his journey across Central Asia, finishing at the Great Wall of China. His 3,000-mile journey took him across Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and Kyrgyzstan. This was the latest of a series of expeditions undertaken by the former county council planner, who has written books and made radio programmes about some of the most remote places on earth. The Winchester-based explorer added, "This was the best trip I've ever done. Certainly it was the most enjoyable, but also the most eye-opening, especially in Afghanistan. Here are these people living in such primitive conditions, and yet they were all so warm-hearted, helpful and welcoming to complete strangers like me." Mr. Pilkington will talk about his latest trip in a new fundraising lecture series at Winchester Discovery Centre on Friday, March 2nd, and on Thursday, March 15th, and Friday, March 30th, all starting at 7:30 p.m. Proceeds will be divided between 2 third-world charities, Oxfam and Practical Action. Tickets can be bought from the Oxfam shop in Parchman Street or by calling 01962 841 627 or 01962 873 603.
New club, hotel and housing for cattle market site? Plan a missed opportunity for wider change. A Winchester Leisure Club and the City Council have been privately discussing a major redevelopment of the cattle market car park. The Winchester Club, in Worthy Lane, has been approached by a developer for a scheme to build a new club, hotel and housing on the wedge of land between Andover Road and Worthy Lane. The development is bound to be controversial. The site could accommodate hundreds of homes and would mean the loss of a popular car park that provides spaces near the centre but without drivers having to enter the one-way system. Charities would also be unhappy at the loss of the site for their Sunday car boot sales. Winchester Liberal Democrats are concerned as they want to see a master plan for the redevelopment of the wider area, including the railway station, Stockbridge Road, Andover Road and cattle market areas. City Councillor Dominic Hiscock, who lives close to the cattle market car park, said, "None of the local residents have been told anything about this yet. What worries me is that we are missing an opportunity to create a comprehensive plan for the whole area. If they just build houses and ignore employment, that will just generate more commuting out of town. There should be high-value employment, offices, and get people to come in. It should be a mixed development." Last December, at the council meeting that approved the local development framework, a Lib Dem motion for a comprehensive plan to prevent piecemeal development was defeated by Conservative councillors. Councillor Hiscock said, "Without such a master plan in the LDF, it would be difficult for the council to resist a planning application." Jean Feltham, Winchester Club Secretary, said, "We need a new club. This building is very old, very expensive to run. We were approached by a developer. We're all looking forward to a new club and new facilities." She declined to name the developer. The club, formerly the Winchester Conservative Club, has 700 members and offers various facilities including a bowling green, snooker room, restaurant and bar. The bowling green would be retained under the plans. A public consultation is due to be held on March the 26th to the 28th, when plans and models will be on show at the club, said Ms. Feltham. The club website says a pre-application document was submitted to the council last November with meetings in December. Following those meetings, revisions have been made in recent weeks. A full planning application is expected in May or June, with a decision expected in the autumn. Also affected would be two artists, Alex Hoare and Andrew Carney, who rent studio space as the Light Factory in the middle of the car park. The cattle market, vacated by the farming community in 1989, has long been eyed by developers, with Waitrose interested in building a store there in the 1990s. A City Council spokeswoman said, "We have had pre-application discussions with them. Their website talks about a consultee committee, and we are confused by what they mean. We don't have a consultee committee. As far as I know, they have met with planning officers." It was unclear whether the clubhouse, built in the 1830s, is a listed building. Questions are to be asked at the full council meeting at the Guild Hall this evening, Thursday.
Woman's death unexplained. A popular Winchester woman died in mysterious circumstances, an inquest heard. Patricia Somerville died suddenly, aged 62, at her home last November, but the reason could not be explained. Mrs. Somerville, of Stockbridge Road, Week, had no underlying medical conditions, and a post-mortem report could not find any obvious cause of death. She was found on November the 13th by her husband, Dr. David Somerville, a retired Winchester GP. Pathologist Dr. Balvinder Shoker, who carried out the post-mortem, said, "There's no evidence of any unnatural causes, so my findings suggest it is most likely natural causes, but exactly what it was that caused her death I cannot say." Dr. Shoker added, "Mrs. Somerville's death was possibly the result of a cardiac arrhythmia, an irregular heartbeat, because that can often be caused by subtle abnormalities in the heart that go undetected in a post-mortem. He ruled out any hereditary conditions. The inquest heard up to 5% of deaths cannot be explained by post-mortems. Dr. Somerville said, "She will be remembered by so many people for her sense of fun, her concern for other people, and above all for her unbounded optimism. The remembrance service we had for Pat at St. Paul's Church was absolutely packed, with over 200 people attending. As a family, we've had numerous cards and messages of condolence, for which we are very grateful. It's clear that Pat will be very badly missed by many individuals and groups in Winchester and far beyond, but most particularly and acutely by her immediate family." Sarah Whitby, Assistant Deputy Coroner for Central Hampshire, recorded a verdict of death by natural causes.
Prayers scrapped before meetings. A decision to drop prayers before full council meetings in Test Valley has prompted an angry reaction from some councillors. The decision was taken after the High Court ruled the practice was unlawful. In a letter to councillors last week, Test Valley's Head of Legal and Democratic Services, Susan Tovey, stated, "TVBC's practice is to hold prayers as part of its full council meetings, a practice that has been declared as unlawful. In the circumstances, therefore, I have had to consider how the council continues this practice lawfully and at minimal risk of being challenged." But Councillor Alison Johnson said, "I'm a Christian. I believe this is a Christian country, and I believe it should be just as lawful to say prayers in the council as it is in Parliament or a school." Councillor Johnston said she felt years of tradition had been overturned for the sake of one man's challenge in Devon, and she would be raising the matter with the council leader Ian Carr and writing to Romsey MP Caroline Noakes to ask her to raise the issue in Parliament. Another unhappy councillor, Ian Hibbard, said he believed the council's legal chief's decision was premature. He said, "I believe we should be waiting until the matter has been tested on appeal, which I'm sure it will be. I don't agree with the head of legal's decision, which was made without consultation." He said that in his 9 years on the council, he'd never heard anyone object to prayers, and he believed it was up to individual local authorities to decide on the issue. Agnostic councillor Steve Cozier admitted that he had always thought that prayers got in the way of the business of the council, but he respected the wishes of those who wanted them. "I think it's up to the council to decide whether we have prayers and not have this decision foisted upon us by the court," he said. "Prayers will no longer appear on the agenda, but there will be an informal gathering for prayers in the council chambers prior to meetings. However, the ban on prayers may only be temporary, as Secretary of State Eric Pickles has said the government's new Localism Act could give councils powers to include prayers as part of the meeting if they wished." And at the base of this article, the Chronicle have said, "What's your view on this issue? Write to Chronicle Letters."
Police confirm city centre move. Mottisfont Court in Winchester will be the new headquarters of Hampshire Constabulary, it has been confirmed. As previously reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, the force is downsizing from its 1960s tower block in Romsey Road to buy the County Council building on the corner of High Street and Tower Street. After a refurbishment, the new, smaller offices will house 150 staff, who could begin to move there within 18 months. Under the plans, some departments previously based at the headquarters will be moved to Alpha Park in Chandler's Ford, including driver training, uniform stores, the Force Inquiry Centre and Scenes of Crime Department. The police authority says that overall the move will be cost neutral, so the price of moving will be offset by the savings made, but have refused to release specific figures, which it says are commercially sensitive. The West Hill site off Romsey Road would be put up for sale when the move was complete. An outline scheme for 294 homes there was approved in 2005. News of the move comes after the authority agreed to freeze the policing element of council tax, which Chief Constable Alex Marshall says could put up to 100 extra jobs at risk. The force is currently looking to cut 1,100 jobs by 2015 to save £50 million.
Summer of drought in store for Hampshire. Hampshire is facing a summer of drought after one of the driest winters on record. The lack of rain has stopped the usual replenishment of the underground chalk aquifers that lie beneath much of the county. But Southern Water this week said it did not foresee hosepipe bans across most of Hampshire, even though nationally last year was the driest in England for 90 years. The company called on customers to conserve water. Around 70% of Hampshire's water comes from the aquifers, which feed springs. About 23% comes from rivers, and only 7% from reservoirs, which in other parts of the southeast are very low. Rod Murchie, Environment Agency Water Resources Manager, said, "It's certainly going to be an environmental drought. At the moment, things aren't as bad as they were in 1976. This winter is not as dry. The groundwater and river levels are getting close to the long-term minimum." Mr. Murchie did not predict water supply problems and said any hosepipe bans would first hit the north of Hampshire before the central and southern areas.
Public put at risk by hygiene breach. He stored food in conditions posing a significant risk to public health, a judge said. Now Paul Gillingham faces a bill of more than £7,000 after admitting 30 food hygiene offences after being sentenced at Winchester Crown Court on Monday. The 55-year-old stored catering supplies, including meat and eggs, at his home in Vernon Road, Week. The court heard that he did so because the unit in Eastleigh from which he operated was destroyed by arson. County Caterers at Brookwood Industrial Estate was gutted in November 2010, causing damage estimated at £500,000. A former employee, Julian White, who is 54, of Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, was jailed for 4 years for arson earlier this month. His former boss, Gillingham, moved the business to Week, where Winchester City Council then inspected. It ordered him to stop using the property, having not legally registered it for food preparation. Yet he kept flouting the ban, the court heard, and was taking deliveries when inspectors returned in July 2010. They found food stored in freezers under tarpaulins in the garden. Mayonnaise was also being stored in a Ford Transit, which should have been kept below 8 centigrade, but was nearer 20 centigrade. In mitigation, the court heard that Gillingham now had new premises in Eastleigh and was obeying hygiene rules. The recorder of Winchester, Judge Keith Cutler, heard that Gillingham had £2,200 in the bank and fined him that much. He also ordered him to sell his car and the Ford Transit, together worth an estimated £3,250, and pay the proceeds. He also imposed costs of £1,800 to be repaid by the end of 2013 and gave Gillingham a 2-year community order. The judge said, "I accept that nobody was ill, but there was a significant risk that it could have happened."
On high, where sheep may safely graze. No need to call the fire brigade. These sheep are in no danger. They're fiberglass models, installed on the roof of the Stripe Lecture Theatre in Winchester. The university, as part of its efforts to cut its carbon footprint, has created a grass-topped roof to better insulate the building at the King Alfred campus on Sparkford Road. It is the first of its kind for the city. What better way to keep the grass down and help draw attention to the feature than three grazing sheep? They're intended as a humorous piece of modern art, emphasising our commitment to environmental sustainability and biodiversity, said Senior Pro Vice Chancellor Professor Elizabeth Stewart. And the article is illustrated by two photographs, one a general view of the Stripe building with the grass roof visible and with the caption, "The Stripe Building at Winchester University, where life-size plastic sheep have been put out to grass." And the second one is of a close-up of the sheep and the grass on which they're grazing.
Port is planning poignant echo of a fateful departure. The fateful departure of Titanic from Southampton will be reenacted at the city docks to mark centenary commemorations of the tragedy. At noon on April the 10th, exactly 100 years since she set sail on her maiden voyage to New York, a recording of the ship's whistle will sound around the port where most of her crew lived, and from which more than 500 households lost at least one family member. The ship's departure will be reenacted when the tug tender Calshot, which was built in the same era to manoeuvre the world's greatest ocean liners, sails from 4344 berth, followed by a flotilla of craft. It is anticipated that all ships in and around the port will sound their whistles as a mark of respect. The announcement came as the 60-day countdown to citywide events began, including the opening of the £15 million Titanic-themed Sea City Museum at 12:15 p.m. on April the 10th. The memorial event at the docks will be held in the Ocean Terminal, which overlooks the Titanic berths, where descendants of victims of the tragedy will join civic dignitaries, representatives of maritime organisations, and business and community leaders. The story will be told of the voyage into history and the disaster that followed when the ship struck an iceberg on April the 14th, 1912. It will be hosted by broadcaster Fred Dinnage, whose great-uncle, James Richard Dinnage, was one of the stewards and perished along with more than 1,500 passengers and crew, 549 of them from Southampton. Port Chaplain, the Reverend Andrew Huckett from the Southampton Seafarers Centre, will lead prayers. Those attending will be invited to place flowers in the water in memory of the victims of the tragedy. The script for the event, written by Terry Yarwood, chairman of the Tug Tender Calshot Trust, will recount the story of the preparation for the departure of the Titanic, the anticipation, excitement of the crew and passengers, and the hectic activity on the quayside. The Royal Marines Association Concert Band and Southampton Choral Society will provide music, comprising tunes from the Edwardian era and patriotic standards. The event has been organised by dock owners, Associated British Ports and Southampton Solent University.
A special day for Evelyn. She celebrated the Big 100 with a party with her family last Saturday. Evelyn Triggs was at 100 on Sunday, but was delighted to receive the card from the Queen the day before the celebrations. Before going into the Abbeygate Care Home in Winchester last year, Evelyn had lived since 1950 in Main Road, Colden Common. After training as a milliner and working in service, she raised three children. Her husband Walter was a second gardener at Branbridge House, now the garden centre, and was later a shunter and then a guard on the railways. Daughter Jean Abel said, "She's still very independent and loved her home and gardening. They both loved the garden. She still loves the flowers and got a lovely bunch of flowers from the Railway Institute. And there's a couple of pictures of Evelyn Triggs with her family and friends.
Hitting the cold spot packs. 50,000 hitting the cold spot packs are being delivered to elderly people across Hampshire in a bid to keep them safe and warm. The County Council, together with more than 40 partner organisations, made a successful bid to the Department of Health for a £319,000 grant. The packs include a snood, a type of scarf, and information on how to organise a visit from an advisor to help with changing energy supplier, fire safety checks, and free cavity wall and loft insulation. Partner organisations include the WRVS, Hampshire Fire and Rescue, Citizens Advice Bureaus, and District Councils.
Jobs to go as CABs merge. Jobs will be lost and opening hours reduced as a result of a merger of Citizens Advice Bureau in the Winchester District. The changes have come about in a cost-cutting measure that has seen a new Winchester CAB formed, which includes its counterparts in Bishop's Waltham and the Meon Valley. The merger is to ensure the survival of both CABs, say bosses, but the full consequences of the change won't be known until April. Jenny Meadows, Chief Executive of the Winchester branch, and now Chief of the new District CAB, said the current staff of 13 would have to be reduced to keep both offices going. She said, "We are having to close both offices one day per week because of insufficient funding from the local authority, and some projects have been terminated because there's not enough money. There will be staff reductions. We're going through that at the moment, so nothing is known as yet, as we are still consulting with everyone. But there's not enough money to pay for everyone. Fortunately, we've lost no volunteers." But she said the new CAB would keep both offices open and provide a consistent level of services with outreach support continuing in Wickham and Alsford. Mrs. Meadows added the CAB is actively looking to move from its base in the Winchester Centre in St George's Street as it was too expensive. She said, "We need somewhere that is cheaper, and the City Council have been very helpful in supporting us. But after staff, the building is our biggest cost. It's the only voluntary group to remain in the offices, which held around a dozen until last year, when many, including Winchester Area Community Action, relocated to City Council offices in Colebrook Street. Opening times will remain as normal until April, when staff and hour reductions will be finalised."
Facing the questions, question time took on a new meaning when Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine visited South Wanston Primary School. After a guided tour by pupils, Brine fielded questions from an audience of Year 5 and 6 children. The Tory MP said he enjoyed the visit to the village school, adding, "I always find question time with young people every bit as challenging as the real thing, and this time was no different." Head Jane Bundy said, "The children learnt a great deal from Steve's visit, including that he is an example of someone who, through determination and hard work, has achieved his goal of becoming a Member of Parliament."
Actress in Conversation. An evening to raise funds for Winchester MenCap is taking place at the City's Discovery Centre. Special guest will be Dame Harriet Walter, who has worked on screen, film, and with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Her film credits include Sense and Sensibility, Atonement, and Babel. On television, she has featured in Little Dorrit, Ballet Shoes, The Men's Room, Law and Order, UK, and Unfinished Business. She will be in conversation with Debbie Thrower on Sunday, March the 4th, from 7 to 9 p.m. The evening will start with wine and canapes and finish with a question and answer session. Tickets cost £15 and proceeds go to Winchester Mencap, which supports the Blue Apple Theatre Company.
And that concludes our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. We'll say thank you to our editors, Jean and Verdon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Thank you too to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Robin Freeman.
Goodbye.
And Jerry Taff.
Bye.
And from me, Ros Lydiard, goodbye. And from all of us here, we hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.